Namaste. You're listening to A Catalyst for your moments of mindfulness today.
So hello, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, and welcome back to my channel if you're tuning in with me on YouTube. Today is a very special episode because I'm joined by a wonderful guest, Tiffany Lin, who's with me today in this beautiful space as well. So I'm very excited to have her on and to bring this little treat to you. As we know, I usually do solo casts on my podcast, so having you with us here is such a treat. So join me in welcoming Tiffany Lin, and I'll let you introduce yourself in a bit about who you are, what you do, and what makes you you.
Ooh, I love that. What makes me me? So I'm Tiffany, and I'm a life coach, or at least my job right now. I consider myself as like a multi-passionate human being. And I think what I would love to be known for is I want to be known for living my authentic truth while empowering others to live theirs authentic truth. What's the last question again?
What makes you you?
What makes me me? I feel like if you were to ask me this question, I would, like, different times in my life, I would say it differently. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in this moment, what makes me me is me in full expression. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the times people say, you know, people come to me and then they're like, Tiff, like, you know, coach me. I want to be able to be in my full expression. And, but people don't understand that the full expression is not the you who dance freely, you know, in public. It's not you being joyful, being free and being in bliss. Like, if you want to be in full expression in that, you also have to love and accept yourself in the murky water, in the dirt, in your sacred shit.
I love that.
Right? In the ugly, in the uncivilized, in you being primal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like what makes me me in this moment is all of that coming to me.
Ooh, I felt all of that. That is so good. And there's so much packed into that because as you were speaking, like, you know, I love the way that you broke down being in your full expression, because especially with the age of social media, we see a lot of these buzzwords thrown around, like fullest self, authentic self. And so when you think about all those words, I know you explained fullest self, but what does it mean to be really authentic? And when clients come to you and, you know, you can kind of see that they're struggling with that, like owning all of who they are. How do you define that? And how do you kind of guide them? And how would you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, my program's called Journey to My Becoming. Mm. And, you know, a lot of the times I feel like authentic is a really subjective word, because sometimes I actually encourage my clients not to be authentic, because how do you be authentic if you don't actually experience, like, you not being authentic and you being uncomfortable?
Right.
Because a lot of the times the authenticity that we desire is from a place of ego, right? It's, I want to be authentic. I want to be like, I want to be cared for. Being authentic is I desire to do what I want to do, which is, by all means, it's great. And that's exactly what I coach my client. But then there's so much that goes deeper into being your authentic self is discerning between if that comes from your ego and deriving from the expectation from the society, from your culture, from your family, or is it that authenticity is underneath all of that, is that whisper of your soul, of like, this is what you're meant to be. You know, like you said I love what your podcast is about, is guiding people home, right? And sometimes in order to guide people home to their true authenticity underneath all of that, it requires you to be uncomfortable.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I forgot your question.
You answered it perfectly.
I was like,
you answered it perfectly.
I feel like, I think, So I feel like the authenticity part is It's so nuanced. Mm-hmm. It's so nuanced, but also so absolute in the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it's the unity of duality, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. like to be able to hold the duality of your ego, your society expectation, all of that, but also on the other side of the true, the truest true, mm-hmm. like beneath all of that, the absolute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so beautiful. I love that picture of duality, and I often paint it to the listeners as well, because when I think about duality, it's black, white, it's masculine, feminine. It's, and what we are is we walk the path in between.
Yeah,
because we have to be able, yep, to bring it all together and to unite it and unite it within here as well. Yeah. And I love how you explained authenticity, because, and pointing out the nuance in it and that it's subjective, because, you know, a lot of what we see on social media and people wanting to embark on their spiritual journey or, you know, connect to themselves, they look at these words and they say, yep, that's what I want to be. Mm-hmm. Or, and we don't really take the time to dissect it and figure out what it means to us, which is all what the journey is about. Mm. Figuring out what it means to us, how we can take these tools, implement them. And like you said, too, you have to, at least personally for me, I had to experience being inauthentic to then realize, like, oh, wait, that's actually not who I am. And there's a whole nother self where it's like, and that authentic self might not get liked by everybody.
Yeah.
In fact, that's pretty much when you know you're being authentic. Yeah. Not everybody likes it and not everybody relates to it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I love the picture that you painted with that. And I love that, you know, you in yourself are guiding clients to understand those nuances within mm-hmm. themselves and within their own journey, which is so important. So mm-hmm. thank you for that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that just adding on top of that, like, that journey to becoming more truer to yourself, there was an expectation of like being linear, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. that's why like sometimes clients come to me and be like, hey, like I want to find my dream job. Like I want to work in my dream career. And I'm like, I love to help you with that. And at the same time, I'm actually more interested in that journey of who you're mm-hmm. becoming than the becoming itself. Like if your becoming is to be that person who is doing your dream career, whether that being a healer or a writer, blah, blah, blah. I'm actually more passionate in helping you discover the depth of you. Mm-hmm. And so then when you are that person, it's inevitable for you to just have that becoming.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And mm-hmm. Like it's about the journey, not the destination. So I love mm-hmm. the name of your program as well. Mm-hmm. And I recently started coaching myself.
Oh, I love
and,
that.
Yeah. And one of the phrases that I used at one point was end goal. And someone pointed mm-hmm. out to me, like, I was like, I don't know if this is my end goal. And it was pointed out to me of like, why does there have to be an end goal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about if it's just for now? Mm-hmm. Or let's just flow and see where it goes. Like, mm-hmm. who says that will be the end anyways,
mm.
you know? So it's all this abstract, especially when we're on this path. So mm. yeah, it's great to dive into that.
Yeah. I find that, and I get into that sometimes too. Like I get into the trap of the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
I think like, and I see that in my clients too. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, like I'm doing that and I have to embody.
Yeah.
But what I found is that when you have an end goal, like there's nothing wrong with focusing on the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the whole thing with, I feel like we're going to, okay, I'm not going to say it because I feel like we're going to dive into it. We're going to open up a can of worms. Okay. But I feel like it's like, let's say like if your end goal is to become a YouTuber
mm-hmm.
and if you focus so much on that end goal, that become the bedrocks of mm-hmm. everything that you build on top of it.
Yeah.
So for example, you think being a YouTuber is virality, it's number, it's views, it's all that,
mm-hmm.
then that becomes your focus.
Yeah.
So that becomes the foundation that you build on top of it.
Yeah.
Whereas is what kind of YouTuber, when I'm that YouTuber, like who am I? Mm-hmm. What values and what qualities, what kind of person am I? Am I purposeful, you know, insightful? Am I genuinely trying to help the world by, you know, showing up and talking about certain subject? What is my bedrocks? What is the foundation of me? And may that be what you build on top of it. And then the YouTuber becomes a byproduct of your foundation. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like the focus is it's different. I feel like the end goal concept is the way that we were brought up.
Exactly.
Right. It's like focusing on like going after that thing, the money, the fame, the job and all that. But I feel like in my journey of my becoming and like coaching others too, it's like I understand it's almost in reverse. It's like you're focusing on quote unquote the journey, your bedrocks, the foundation, and then everything else builds on top of it. Yeah.
I had goosebumps because it's so true. That was such a beautiful like visualization, but also truth as well, because from those bedrocks now that you've built, you can do YouTuber, you can do podcaster, you can do anything that you want to do, because that is so that foundation is so strong and it can take you anywhere, which is, you know, what life is about.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly changing, constantly fluid. But if we have that solid foundation, we can go wherever we want to.
So. Yeah. And people come to you not for virality, not for views. Mm-hmm. People come to you because of you, because of whatever that is, your foundation, your being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'll just shine through in everything that you do. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
And so I already can feel that whoever's listening can grab a pen and paper because there's going to be gems dropped here. But you also mentioned just now in the way that we're brought up has a lot to do with who we become and who we are. And, you know, I always say on the podcast too that life is a process of unlearning. As much as we are always learning, it's unlearning. Yeah. And funny enough, when I think I first came across you on Instagram, when I did my little research on you too, I think you were hosted on a mental health clinic website primarily for Asian folks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was like, that stood out to me because I was like, I love that she's like honoring her background, her heritage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it is in a way to kind of give back and teach what we know. So could you speak a little bit about your background and how that kind of played a role into what you do today?
Oh my gosh, I feel like I could go into so many different directions. My background and how it comes to be today. So actually, I was born and raised in Taiwan until I was 14. And then, you know, I was like, I was just in that culture. Like that was my life. And at 14, obviously that's not like an instant decision, but I made a decision to come to Canada by myself.
Wow.
To study. Mm-hmm. And don't worry, my parents love me. Like it's not that like, oh my God, okay, off you go.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a struggle. I think that when I look back now, thinking about how I made that decision was I grew up just never feeling belonged. Like I just felt like there was something more. Like I don't get why. I think as an empath, as an empath, empathic child, I didn't know why people were not living their truth, like for a lack of a better word. Like I look at my parents and for example, my dad loves singing. Like he is someone who you like religiously follow these singing concerts, shows like, you know, like the American Voice and all that. And he loves singing and he would, you can see he got emotional. Like a few times I actually see him getting emotional was when he like hear like really moving singing or songs. And he always play like really beautiful jazz music, has great taste with music. But then whenever I ask him, I'm like, hey, like, have you ever think about, you know, going like try singing as a career, or, like try doing more singing, like as a child. Right. Mm-hmm. And he just shut me down. He's like, you're funny.
Right.
You're like, you know, your hobby, your talents can't be a career. Mm-hmm. Right. And growing up, I loved dancing. And that was always something that it's been shut down for me.
Mm-hmm.
So things like this, right. It's just like, I always see a discrepancy between people's truth and what people are actually doing. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I always feel like there must be something more.
Right.
And in a way, like growing up, like in Taiwan, we, you know, there were like the U.S., Western culture influence. And we, like, I love watching these, like, I don't know, High School Musicals or like these movies growing up, and just like teenagers going after their dreams. And so I feel like there was always like, oh, maybe like, you know, somewhere else there was a place that I could feel free. I could feel belong. So, at 14, I made the decision to come to Canada and, to feel belong or to find my place. And of course, it was so, so tough in the beginning to be away from my family, from my culture, from everything.
Yeah.
And I got into depression. I didn't know it was depression at the time, right. But I was really, really depressed. I was like crying every day, and I would be like going out far for a walk for like 2-3 hours after school, and just feeling really lost. And but I feel like that decision really sets the trajectory of my life.
Yeah.
And until now, what I do today is, at one point, you know, 14, 15, 16, I journal a lot.
Me too.
I journal a lot growing up, and journaling in the beginning was my outlet. It's like I let my frustration, sadness, and anger out. But then I think eventually it becomes my relationship with myself. I am in a relationship with myself, and I become my own inner guidance, because I didn't have anyone at the time.
Right.
Like, I pull myself out of depression. And I think having that resilience and inner guidance and introspection, I think that sets a foundation for who I am and also what I do and why I do what I do.
Of course. Yes. No, thank you. I felt everything that you said so deeply, but especially it's so clear that because you've taken yourself through that, you're now so passionate and able to help people do that too.
Yeah.
And I relate to a lot of what you said, because I moved to Canada from New York City at the age of 13.
Wow.
And so 13, 14, like, those are pivotal
it's
years.
It's really
of your
young.
Life. And it's tough. Like, for me, I started grade 8 here. So I left behind.
By yourself too?
I moved with my mom.
Okay.
And that's another story on its own.
Yeah.
But at the time, I had left behind my friends. I had a lot of my life mapped out at that age, because I knew what high school I was going to go to. I knew what I wanted to study, and like everything was there.
Mm.
And coming here, needing to integrate into, I had a bit of a culture shock too.
Yeah.
Integrate into a new society, new family, because my mom got remarried, which is why we moved.
Right.
So it was a lot of change at once. And I was an only child then. Mm-hmm. Now I have a little brother. But journaling was my outlet too.
Oh, wow. How similar.
Yeah. So when my parents were going through a divorce, when we talk about upbringing, like, I was told, like, you know, don't let your friends know, or don't tell your teachers.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a lot of pressure for like a young kid, right? So I turned to writing, and I would, just like you, I'll talk about my day, what upset me, what made me sad. And it is so true. You said it perfectly, when that becomes your relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
And that becomes your inner guidance, because I found myself like reflecting upon the day, what went well, what didn't go well, what will I change for tomorrow? And so I think it's remarkable that you pulled yourself out of whatever it is that you were going through, especially through depression, because that is tough. And even at that age too, it really shows you what you're capable of and what the rest of your life, the skills that you can have for the rest of your life. So when you moved here, was there any doubts in your mind at a time whether or not you made the right choice?
I actually never thought it was a wrong choice, even though I was really sad. And, you know, like you said, at that young age, your friends were your everything, and to be so far away from your friends. And and of everything that I've been through, and all the feelings of sadness and hurt and loneliness, it was really lonely. I actually never thought it was a wrong choice. And it's funny, because I'm like, I don't know if it's because I just didn't give myself the choice, because I was the one who made the decision. You know, it's different when I don't know how you felt on your end.
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem like it was your choice. Mm-mm. So there was almost, so I don't know. Did you feel like there was a regret, or did you feel like it was, there was a level of resentment or like not understanding of the decision for you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I think for sure there was a level of resentment. Mm. And I absolutely hated it when I first moved here. In fact, that year is blocked out of my memory. Wow. Like, I don't remember much.
Even now?
Yeah, even to this day, I cannot recall like specific moments that happened. Mm. There's like bits and pieces here and there. Either they were really traumatic and I remember them, or they were really happy and I remember them.
Right.
But I cannot really recall. Mm. Even if I'm asked, like, oh, do you remember this person? We went to school with them. No.
Wow.
I can't recall. And I think that is a testament of how much I sort of blocked it out of my memory. So yeah, it is a little different from you. But I also wonder, in your case, because of the culture that you were brought up in, I'm sure what you did was not normal.
No.
Or even like, I'm sure your parents supported you, but it wasn't the norm, or
right.
Yeah. So was there any part of you that felt like, even if you doubted yourself and you wanted to move back home, you couldn't, because it would kind of be, you wouldn't be supported in that?
It's funny. It's actually the opposite. I feel like it's fun. It's interesting because, it was a decision that I was almost the, I was a decision maker, but then obviously like they supported me financially and everything and like to help me move forward. Mm-hmm. But it's very ambivalent for them too, as parents, right? Cause like, of course they want their sweet daughter to be besides them. But at the same time, it's like, this is a choice that she really wanted. And in a way they could also see the benefits of it. So it's very ambivalent for them. So it's opposite when I said it's, I knew that if I were to have a single, if I were to have a sign of I want to come home, I would be home right away. Like they would no doubt let me home. They're like, could just come home. Like, and it's funny, it's exactly because of that I didn't have a choice to regret it. I didn't let myself have a choice to regret it because it was a decision that I made it for myself. And it made it even more lonely because I didn't dare to share with them all the negative things that were going through my life. Like, not even when I was sick, I didn't dare to tell them because I just wanted to make sure they know I'm doing well, you know?
Yeah.
So they didn't know that I was depressed. They didn't know, at least not directly. I don't know if they could see it from afar, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
My heart is open right now, like holding space for that version of you, because that is so heavy. And like, you know, just
as a 14-year-old.
Yeah. And by yourself, like, and your parents are your world at that age too, where, you know, they've taught us everything that we know to that point. And now you're making the decision, I'm actually going to forge my own path. That's huge.
Yeah.
And do you have any siblings?
I have one older brother.
Okay.
And actually he stayed in Taiwan.
That's what I was going to ask.
Which is really interesting because usually it's the older sibling who study abroad first, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, no, just it's a younger sibling here. And so the only younger sibling only.
Love that. Yeah. So, you know, you took your reins and you just rode with it, which is so commendable. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure there's, you know, not an ounce of regret now.
Yeah, no. Like I would not have known how my life and how I would be if I were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm really, really happy. Like the full expression that you see in me, that was the onset, you know, that sets a trajectory of how I was able to be the full expression that you see today.
Exactly. Yeah. And just like we said at the beginning, like you had to experience those lows when you were near touching that bedrock and saying, okay, what do I want to create from this new foundation that I'm setting?
Yeah.
And experiencing, you know, those bouts of like inauthenticity or like, who am I questioning to now get to that authentic full expression.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I think that experience almost like, because I made that decision, and coming to a new country with everything new, I had to reconstruct my bedrocks.
Exactly.
Not from my conditioning. not from my family, my culture, my society, but really dive deep. And I'm still reconstructing. Yeah. We're always reconstructing.
Always.
But it just really like, okay, in order for me to be here and to be the person that I wanted to be, who, like, what bedrocks do I have right now? And are they serving me or not? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I know for people listening, even though you might not relate to moving to a new city, country, mm-hmm. wherever it is, but at some point in life, we may be fortunate enough to be able to take a leap of faith. And yeah. I would call what you did a leap of faith, saying, you know, nothing here in my home country is resonating with me anymore. Take that leap because I know there's something else out there. So yeah. for listeners who find themselves in that spot, you know, wanting to or willing to make that leap, maybe they're a little hesitant, afraid of, you know, what's on the other side because we don't truly know. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to them?
Taking leaps. I love this topic on taking leaps. I feel like taking leaps is also not linear, actually. Like, I feel like in my journey, I took many, many leaps. And I think there are times where it made sense to just build your, what is that thing where, like, when you jump and then you have to build your suit,
like the bungee cord,
not the bungee cord, but
parachute.
Oh my god, I don't know why that word wasn't coming to me. So I feel like sometimes it made sense to take the leap while you're building the parachute mm-hmm. on the way down, right? Yeah. And I did that, you know. I feel like coming here in Canada at the age of 14 by myself was that.
When I first
Got out of school and I started working the first year, I was making 30K a year annual income, and I invested 20K on learning how to invest in real estate.
Wow.
And I did not have the money. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed it from the bank. Yeah. That's a big leap of faith. Like, for there's, sure. you know, there are a few like big leaps, like that. And even the fun things that we talk about, I did a half Ironman this year.
Yes.
With only 4 months of training. But the craziest thing is I didn't know how to swim before. And wow. I never ran more than 5K before that. Like, I was not the cardio girl. Like, mm-hmm. I was the dance girl. I was the yoga girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just put myself to that leap. So like, there was those leaps that, you know, it's fun. It's expansive. It's also very scary to build the parachute on the way down. So it's not, I don't recommend it for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it for every situation scenario. I think there's also the taking the leap. It's like tendering to your nervous system and expanding, leaning to the edge of you. And both of them, I think, will get you to where you desire to be. And it's more so a matter of discerning what makes sense to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And would you say that parachute that you learned to build on your way from Taiwan to Canada, is that the same parachute that kind of takes you through your new experiences? For example, because you had that on your back, you knew you had that parachute. Did you feel safe or confident in yourself to sign up for Ironman? Like, is it those same kind of...
It's definitely cultivating that muscle resilience.
Mm.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that makes me more ballsy like that.
For sure. Yeah.
But I think the reason why... I think there's pros and cons, right? Like, to be completely honest, like, I was training for so much in that 4 months, especially the last 2 months until my race. I was like exercising, I don't know, like just a lot. I can't even fathom. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember the numbers, but the moment I finished my race, I literally was like, I'm not exercising for the rest of my life. You know,
I paid my dues.
Yeah. I was like, I think my quota of my life is done. It's maxed out. But jokes aside, I literally, after I finished my race, I didn't do cardio as much. And I think it's because I was so overstretched, I needed for the spring to kind of bounce, slowly come back to a new normal before I feel like I have the space space to stretch myself again. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were to just leaning to the edge of you and expand at a capacity that is expanding for you, and right. but also a little bit, but also like it makes sense to you,
right.
then you probably don't need to overstretch yourself and then come back and right. overstretch yourself and come back, mm-hmm. right? So I think definitely building that muscle of resilience, but also just like discerning on like if what makes sense to you and exactly. in what situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I love that image of like the spring basically mm-hmm. that we're stretching to get to where we want to be and then having to right size it afterwards, because yeah. it's so true. And unfortunately, especially in our society of like overachieving, hustling, all of that, our spring for our life is constantly being stretched.
Yeah.
And then we experience things like burnout.
Yeah.
And you know, how many people are actually able to kind of tend to their nervous system to exactly. give it that, you know, right size it. We don't see it often, mm-hmm. but it's so important to talk about it. So thank you for bringing that up.
Absolutely.
Talk us through that then. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, your thought process as to why you wanted to sign up for Ironman, you know, mm-hmm. having never swam,
yeah.
having not being the cardio girl, like where were you in your life at that mm-hmm. time to decide this is something that I want to do?
So doing an Ironman is something that I always have on my bucket list.
Okay.
But it's funny because it's one of those where like, I absolutely had no idea what it entails. It's just mm-hmm. something that's cool. It's just like, you know, it's like if you have a bucket list,
yep.
you gotta have an Ironman in there. Gotta have a triathlon in there.
I mean, I'll add it now, but
just because it's cool, like for vanity reasons, yeah. right? So I feel like it's always in there for like vanity reason. I don't know why it's there. Like, I don't even know what it entails.
Yeah.
And last year I was kind of going through some stuff with my family and it was just very, very heavy for me. And I literally just came across this woman at a gym, which is funny because I never, ever talked to anyone at a mm-hmm. gym. I'm always like headphones in and out. Yeah. And then the only time I talked to someone, which is this woman, and we just started spark up a conversation and she was like, yeah, actually I do triathlon. I am a sponsor cyclist and he's like, it's so much fun, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, I always wanted to do a triathlon. And then she looked at me up and down and I was like, oh shit. And then she was like, you can totally do it.
Okay.
And then I was like, what do you mean I can totally do it? I was like, have you seen me? Like, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm not muscular. I'm not like fit. Like, what do you mean? And she's like, no, of course you can do it. She's like, why don't you come join me to my training?
Wow.
And then I was like, okay, like maybe. So then I feel like that was a seed that planted.
For sure.
Right. And it's like slowly sprouting. And then, so like I joined and it was amazing because like in that training, like you just see people from all walks of life. There's people, mm-hmm. there's a guy who is 72 and he's still doing triathlon. Amazing. Right. So fit.
Yeah.
And it literally, it's like, wow, like who am I to say that I can't do it?
Right.
And that's what I love. It's like, okay, I wanted to do it because I wanted to prove that limitations is perception. I didn't know how to swim. I never run more than 5K. So let me just see where it goes. And I think it's also this idea of like, I have nothing to lose. Like at the end of the day, like I just improve my training. That's Absolutely. It, you know?
Yeah.
So then that was also a good way for me to focus on something mm-hmm. to alchemize, you know, the difficulty that's been going on with my life at the time.
Yeah.
So then I went and I was training and yeah. And it was amazing. It was, I think the interesting thing is everyone who have told me that you can't do it are the people who have never done it before.
Ooh.
And the people who have told me that, of course you can do it. It's a walk in the park,
mm-hmm.
are the people who have done it. And that says so much about
Absolutely.
What you do in life. When you go about doing the things that are not the mainstream, mm-hmm. are a bit off course to the rest of us.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to?
Right.
Actually, my dad in the beginning was trying to convince me not to do it because he was like, you're not going to make it. You're just going to disappoint yourself.
Yeah.
And then, which is really beautiful because at the end of the race, the last 30 meters, he ran with me across the finish line.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And now I'm trying to convince him to do it.
See, Dad, I did it. So
now it's your turn.
Funny enough, when I reached out to Tiff the first time, she was actually in Taiwan at the time, going through her rigorous training. I remember seeing her stories like up at the crack of dawn, before dawn even, to get her trainings in late at night. And I was like, okay, like when we talk, it'll definitely be interesting. But I can definitely see, and I hope the listeners feel that too, like how you were expanding yourself through that experience and building that muscle resiliency, not even, you know, physical muscles, sure, of course, but the muscle of your mind as well.
Oh, absolutely.
To retrain yourself out of that programming, to tell yourself that you could do it, to feed that inner voice, to keep going, and also the discipline in the training.
Yeah.
Did you find that you had skills before that helped you through the training? So for example, discipline or...
It's funny because I think the skill that I had, like, sure, I had discipline and all that. But I think the skill that I had was I'm really good at negotiating with myself.
Okay.
You know how, like, we all do that, right? It's like you have a new motivation and you're like, I'm going to wake up at like 5 a.m. every day now.
Yep.
And then you do that the first 2 days and it was great. And on the third day, you're like, you just come up with the most brilliant excuses, right? Yeah. Like you're just like, oh, like I didn't go to sleep. I didn't technically fall asleep until like 12:05 yesterday. So like, I'm going to be needing more sleep today. Let me just like sleep for a little bit more, stuff like that. Right. So I feel like I'm really good at that.
Okay.
It was really funny. But then I feel like in the training, I actually use that skill to trick myself into running more or biking more or swimming more, right? It's like, oh, I'm just going to run till the end of that line. And then when I'm at that line, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to run till the next line.
So
I just keep doing that and keep doing that. So that actually was what was able to like help me keep going and not give up.
Yeah. I get that. And it's always that extra push. And to be honest, I am guilty of dreading that extra push.
Yeah.
Like I used to see a trainer for strength training and he would tell me, okay, 10 reps, let's say. And I get to 10, I'm ready to put the weight down. He's like, do two more.
Yeah. And you're like,
I'm already down. I'm not doing it. I used to argue all the time.
Yeah.
But through experience, through coaching and getting that type of training, that is where the growth happens.
Yeah.
Pushing past like that preconceived limit, like you said in your mind, and realizing I did 10, I can do two more. I ran to that line, I can run to that other line. Like that is truly that magic spot where we grow on like all levels. So that is so great.
Yeah. And one thing that I've learned is, and I can't, this is not from me. I think I've seen it somewhere. I think it's probably by David Goggins.
Okay.
So he talks about how when you are physically exhausted, fully feel like you can't do anything anymore, you've actually only used up 40% of what's available for you physically. So the most of it is in your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That is great.
Mm-hmm. And in this journey, I always tell people, it's like, oh, like people always ask me, like, does it get easier? Like, are you getting better? Like, is 10K or 21K run just like so easy for you now?
Yeah.
And when I think about it, I'm like, actually, no, like it doesn't get easier. You actually just get better at enduring pain for longer.
That is so true. Yeah. I mean, it's a metaphor for life.
It is a metaphor for life. It's resilience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so beautiful how that experience sort of mirrors the life path, and especially the path that you chose to walk as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even meeting that resistance in the beginning. And I'm not sure if we mentioned, but you actually did your race in Taiwan.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you were back home with your family at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and how was that? Like, you know, going through the difficulties, like, do you feel like the race was sort of like an outlet for you? Mm-hmm. Was that how you were able to alchemize and move through that?
I think it was more, in a way, it was an alchemy of my pain. And in a way, it's probably also a distraction is for me to like look at somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I think going back with my family and like, I love my parents so dearly. At the same time, I think because of they're going through a lot in life, in their lives right now. And I think going through things is fine, but I feel like going through things for a very, very long time, but then not trying to deal with it differently, mm-hmm. not like victimizing yourself and not making radical change and taking radical responsibility right. is difficult to be with as a daughter. Mm-hmm. And for me to be with them for 7 months, you know, as a grown ass adult is like, and it's not even, I'm thinking about, it's not even my parents. It's not about my parents. I think it's like to be with anyone yeah. in such close proximity who is such a victim of life. Mm-hmm. It's just difficult to be with. And considering that they are my parents and it's, you know, I care about them so much, and to see that, it's just hard to see. Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we all reach a point in our relationship with our parents where we realize, and I'm not sure if you look at it the same way, it's what is the lesson here for me to learn?
Yeah.
Because they are our greatest teachers. Our family are our first teachers, God. Really.
They are.
Our parents, mm-hmm. and for them,
they're also our kids. Biggest triggers.
Yeah, and it's because we see ourselves in them.
Yeah, absolutely. We're like,
I'm part of both of them. Mm-hmm. And now everything is a trigger. And that's mm-hmm. a big part of my journey has been that. And when mm-hmm. I get triggered by my parents, I'm like, this exists within me. That's the only reason why it's yeah. triggering that part of me. And that absolutely. Would be my next level of healing.
Yeah, it's you're being activated. Mm-hmm. You're being called to expand for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah. So far I'm loving the parallels between your life journey and also mm-hmm. the Iron Man race, especially you being back home to complete that. Was it sort of like a full circle moment for you, do you think? You know, being back at home, seeing how much you've grown mm-hmm. and also starting something new again.
I think, I wouldn't say if it's a full circle, but I feel like it's a seed planted for mm-hmm. I hope it's a seed planted for my dad.
I love that. Yeah. Cause like I said, like we teach each other. So, and I think even, you know, I would love to have kids of my own someday. And I hope that as much as, you know, I am instilling in them values and principles, yeah. like, you know, I'm so open to learning from them as well.
Yeah.
Because kids are so pure. And so even pure. For you, there's some innocence in what you chose to take on too, of like
yeah.
this big challenge ahead of you of the Ironman race. And you're just like, I can do it. Like yeah. I, you know, there's something so pure about that and like untainted by other people's expectations or other people's like doubts even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually. And this year, because we're going back again in the winter, and I managed to challenge my dad to do at least a half marathon with us.
Wow.
So it was really great because, yeah, I think that I hope that he can also see that, you know, limitation is just perception. Mm-hmm. Cause it was really tough for me to like convince him. I was like, cause I think he's like really athletic.
Okay.
But then he would tell me that like, oh, I'm turning 65 soon. Oh my God, I'm going to work. I'm so old. Like yeah. I can't do it. And then, but then he like did a lot of 10K runs.
Okay. Race.
So then I was like, why don't you just try, you know, pull the bar up a little bit and mm-hmm. challenge your limitation. Cause I think the beauty of it is once your limitations have been challenged, you can actually look around in your life and be like, what else is possible?
Right.
You know, yeah. mm-hmm. it's like, oh, if what I think is limited is actually not limited. So what else do I think is limited that's actually not limited?
Right. Yeah. Or even as motivation in the past, what have I seen as limitations and actually surpassed it?
Yeah.
That's the, you know, we do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, when it seems like something so different from our everyday, it seems more intimidating.
Yeah.
But that's great that you convinced him. So he will be doing the race with you?
So he will be doing it. Well, our whole family was basically doing it together. Like my brother, my dad, my boyfriend, we're all doing it together.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, if Papa Lynn is listening to this, we're proud of you.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so based on everything that you've learned and the way that you've advocated for yourself and, you know, built your parachute, do you feel like there's some sort of responsibility to also show your parents that path? And just as you've encouraged your dad?
I don't know if the word is responsibility. Maybe it is, because, but I do feel like even just me proactively taking charge of my life, you know, creating my extraordinary life, there's a hope that, you know, they could also one day be inspired and take charge of their own lives. But I want to do so in a way, not from a place of manipulation. So I never really be like, why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing that? You know, because I know that's going to drive people away further.
Right.
It's going to perpetuate shame. But yeah, I think in a way, sometimes I think about, like, ultimately, I think they're my biggest inspiration in a way to, like, I want to just continue to do this. And hopefully, you know, they hear me today. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's beautiful. And you're right. It's not quite, or at least from the perspective that you have, it's not really a responsibility, but rather when you embody your truth and your fullest expression and your authentic self and everything that we started talking about, it shines through and it, you know, it inspires people.
Yeah.
Even if it comes down to our parents, like, people will see what you have made possible from your life and inspire them to do the same, you know, if it's within others' capabilities, capacity, or even within their hearts to want to be that way. So it's something that also just naturally happens with, you know, with being who we are, which I think is so great.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, not just them, but also just everyone that I have the opportunity to connect with. I think ultimately that is what I would love, is just through me continuously living my truth, it inspires others to live theirs too. And and like, the more people can live in their truth, it's like, it just spreads more.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And that's what we so need in this world right now. Just coming back home to ourselves. And we're all here. My podcast is founded on that idea that we're all here to kind of guide each other back home too.
Yeah,
because we're all going to the same place. We all want the same things.
We all want the same thing.
We just have different ways of getting there.
Yeah.
And so for our listeners here, what are some of the tools that have helped you along that journey?
There's one big concept that has really helped me is on shaming. I think I didn't know that there were many parts of me, because of the society, the, you know, the culture, the family, growing up, there was an external witness of certain parts of me that were not accepted. And they eventually became my internal witness to myself. Right. And that is just shame, perpetuating shame. And I think my journey of becoming, one of the biggest tools for me is to learn to unshame, to learn to love and accept the parts of me that has deemed unlovable by the world. And the more I can accept those parts of me, the more I deepen the love that I have with myself. And I think the journey of becoming is also just a journey of your epic love affair with yourself.
Ooh, I feel it. That is so good.
And I think sometimes it's really difficult, because like we talked about in the beginning, it's
your full expression. It's dirty. It's murky water. It's primal. It's uncivilized. But our society only wants us to be civilized.
Yep.
Wants us to be diplomatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we can really allow that part to be seen, and ultimately they just want to be seen.
Yeah.
Just give them oxygen to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't have to like run around naked on the street. I mean, you want, if you want to, totally can't
care. Yeah.
I love to. but I think ultimately it's like, they just want to be seen by you.
Yeah.
Boy, when I learned that and the expansion and the deepening of my love that I have for myself and also for other people.
That's
so much more compassion than I have for other people.
Yeah. Cause you came back to where it all started with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to let that one resonate for a bit. Yeah.
That's coming home.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest tool, I think.
Beautiful. And that leads perfectly into our last question, which was, so from that biggest lesson, that biggest tool that you have and everything that we've talked about, everything that you've gone through in life, what advice would you go back and give 14-year-old Tiffany?
Actually, that was such a beautiful question. Like, no one ever asked me that. What advice would I give the 14-year-old Tiff? To be honest, I feel like she didn't need advice. Okay. I'm like, she's strong. Like, I feel like sometimes I need advice from her.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if it feels more comfortable, we can flip it. For your state of life right now, where you are in your life right now, what do you think 14-year-old Tiff would say to you?
Take up space. Be bigger. I think she wants to see me shine brighter. Like, if I'm big, be bigger. Like, if I just like, yeah. Yeah. I think she's just like, what do you think I did? What I did, like, over here.
Yeah.
Like, don't shrink yourself. Like, take up space. Like, be bigger.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah. You know, our 13/14-year-old selves would be friends.
Yeah.
Because I feel the same way about myself at that age. Like, I'm like, where did that girl get the confidence from? Like, I always say, like, me between the ages of 12 to 14 is my true self. Like, that is my true self. The strength, the charisma, the power, the self-belief, where she didn't care about what everybody else was doing, what they were saying, what they were saying about her, because she was a new girl.
Yeah.
She didn't care.
Exactly.
She was herself. Being new teaches you like who you really are.
Yeah, because you can be whoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I love like solo traveling too. Like,
exactly.
Putting myself in new environments, because it's like, even if I felt like I was in a box at home or I couldn't be who I was at home, I can start over in this new place. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody knows me here. And that's when I get to be myself. I don't care if they don't like me, because I'm not attached to anything.
Exactly.
And so like that ages of myself, like I say that is my true self.
I love that. I think like, and you're right. Like, there's so much beauty in being in a new place, because you're being the person, not by the conditioning of the environment, the people that you see, that ultimately sets you into a certain, you know, persona. Yeah. You can just be the multidimensionality of you.
Exactly.
I love it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Tiff. And thank you to younger Tiff too for the words of wisdom and the gems today. I hope everyone listening found something that connected with your heart, something that resonated with you, and even a piece of advice or courage that you have to move forward in your journey. And I think I can speak for both of us when I say, like, I will leave Tiff's information in the show notes below as well, if anybody wants to reach out to her, because if something in this mini-sode, tugged on your heartstrings, if you want to explore something more, we are both available for you to reach out and chat. I'll let Tiff kind of share a bit more about her coaching as well for anybody who might be interested.
Yeah. So right now my signature program is, my one-on-one program. It's the Journey to My Becoming. And yeah, I essentially just guide my clients to come back home to the truer version of themselves, to honor their authentic truth, to feel courageous to make decisions that suit themselves. And whether that is your lifestyle, your career, your dreams, your passion. One of my clients just finished my container and she's on her way to become a writer. Like she just finished her manuscript. Like it was so beautiful. It was so fun. And in the meantime, it's like, I feel like what I love about coaching with me, it's very intuitive. We talk about everything. We talk about, family, setting boundaries. We talk about healing. I focus a lot on the subconscious mind because mm-hmm. like you operate your life 95% from your subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. So, and relationship.
Yeah.
All that jazz. So
beautiful. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah. So there you have it. As you all know, and as Tiff knows as well, I end every segment with a guided meditation. So mm-hmm. I invite you to join me.
Okay. Let's do this.
Yeah. I'm just going to slide forward, get my feet on the ground, and wherever you're tuning in from, if it's safe to do so, I invite you to close your eyes. Settling into the space around you, taking a deep inhale through the nose, filling up your belly, your chest, and exhaling completely, relaxing your shoulders, relaxing your eyes, relaxing your jaw, taking another deep inhale in, filling up your belly, chest, feeling the breath reach your chin, as you exhale through the mouth, letting the day go, letting the moments go, and feeling into that stillness beneath your breath, the stillness inside of you, as you continue to breathe softly here, inhaling and exhaling, coming back to your heart center, feeling your heart rate slow, your breath slow, and the thoughts in your mind slow down for just a few moments here as you tend to your mind, body, and spirit. In this place of stillness, is where we can hear the whisper of our soul, where we can tune in to our truth, where we can feel our truest emotions, our truest selves, and where we can become and feel grounded to express all that we are. Feel into this stillness and feel into your power in this moment right here. You may wish to imprint this feeling with a picture. For example, you might envision a beautiful golden light at your heart center. You may envision a certain color. Maybe you imagine yourself in a certain environment where you feel grounded, where you feel all your power. I invite you to take a moment to imprint that right now. Breathe into this feeling. And as you begin to bring your awareness back to center, back to this present moment, I invite you to keep this picture that you've imprinted in your mind with you as you go along the rest of your week, the rest of your life, as a reminder of these moments of stillness, so that when life gets busy, when your mind gets busy, can come back to this place as these moments of mindfulness are accessible to you at any time by simply closing your eyes and tuning inwards for a few deep breaths. And when you're ready, you slowly open your eyes and come back to your space, come back to your surroundings. Thank you for joining me.
That was so beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you for sharing all that you do. Thank you for all the work that you do. And thank you all for tuning in with us. I hope you found something valuable. I hope you feel inspired. And I hope you are well wherever you are. So thank you for tuning in with us today. And I look forward to connecting with you again soon. Namaste.
Thank you. That was so lovely.
It was great. If you enjoyed this minisode, please leave a 5-star rating on the platform you're using to listen or on my Facebook page at Catalyst by Kaylin. And please continue to share this podcast with those who you believe can benefit from a few moments of mindfulness today. Thank you.